So we were told that this morning we would meet someone who is a commander in the Israel Defense Forces, and at the same time is a farmer on the land and in the state of Israel. And with that in mind, it is an honor to welcome Sergeant Yehuda Alon to JM in the AM. Boker Tov, and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. Boy, oh boy, I know you'll never understand this, which is part of the reason why we have such admiration for our brothers and sisters in Israel. But when someone like yourself is in front of me, I feel like I'm speaking to a Jewish hero. And again, I'm sure you probably don't feel the same way, but that's the reality for us.
The reality in Israel is that everyone is a hero. Everyone went to the army. Every single person does what he have to do, and that's it.
On Sunday, I happened to, complete coincidence, although, of course, we as people of faith don't believe anything is a coincidence. On Sunday, I met up with a group of soldiers who are amputees, the soldiers from Israel, who are men and women who are amputees. And as we're in the middle of this conversation, an impromptu conversation, I say that it's unbelievable how many Jewish heroes there are. And a woman soldier in a wheelchair without legs, frankly, turns to me and says, there are too many Jewish heroes.
Yeah.
And boy, if that doesn't sum it up. So you've spent the bulk of the last 4 months where?
So since October 7th, I was in reserves. I'm a paratrooper, a sergeant. And we've been to many places. Like on October 7th, we went straight to Kfar Aza to fight over there. We've been there 3.5 days. And then we went to the north for 1.5 months. Everyone thought that a war will start with Lebanon. And after 1.5 months, we were told that we are going to Gaza, and we've been for the last 2 months in Khan Yunis, the southern city in the Gaza Strip.
Yeah, the capital, so to speak, or the unofficial capital of the Gaza Strip.
It's the unofficial capital of Hamas leaders.
Right. And you were there.
Yeah.
And the videos that we see of the operations taking place there, and the tunnels that are discovered, and the places that the Israeli army decides to take over, some of which were turned into synagogues and places to pray. The you were part of that whole experience.
Everything is real. That's reality over there. And you see only a bit of what's really going on. And in this platform, I can say that the IDF is winning this war big time. And
you have a family, I assume?
Yeah. I'm married. I have 4 daughters.
And could I ask you what city you live in?
I live in a place called Bneit Kalim. Oh, that's a new yishuv.
From Kalim?
From Nevet Kalim, that was in Gush Katif. Right. My wife is from Nevet Kalim.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. How does your wife feel about this war after where she grew up?
For everyone, this war is about going back to something that we almost forgot, to be united, to fight for the true in Israel, to fight for other people. On October 6th, the people in Israel were fighting one against each other, and to go back, they sing to go back to Gush Katif. It's not only to Gush Katif, it's going back to live together.
Yeah, understood. Sergeant Yehuda Alon is here. May I ask how old you are? Would that be
it? I'm 36 years old.
36 years old, father of 4 girls.
True.
Living in Nevet Kalim.
Bneit Kalim.
Bneit Kalim, an offshoot of Nevet Kalim.
Yeah. Right,
from the Gaza Strip. So, and you say that Israel is winning this war, and that's one of the messages I assume that you constantly repeat as you travel around the United States and other places, right? Why are you here right now? Why are you in New Jersey?
So, I came at Sunday morning to America, because if you think about this war, I always tell that the army wasn't prepared to that war. And when my commander called me to come on October 7th and all my soldiers, he did it by WhatsApp. And we said, like, are you calling us by WhatsApp? The army didn't call. And he said, there is no army. We must go and fight. And we did it. And
he made that decision independently?
Yeah. My commander decided
that I'm for his own
decision that he is calling everyone. It's Saturday morning. Everyone was sleeping, 7:15. And the army wasn't prepared. Our base that is located in Rehovot, the people over there didn't know that we are coming.
How far is B'nai Tekelim from the Gaza border?
45 kilometers.
Oh, it's far.
But we went straight to the base in Rehovot, right. And the soldier in the base gate, he didn't know that we are coming because the army didn't call reserves, so he didn't let us in. So we had to jump over the fence to run into the base. And if the army wasn't prepared at October 7th, the government in Israel is not prepared to the day after the war.
Right.
And I'm a farmer. I finished my army service about 2.5-3 weeks ago, and I wanted to go back to my farm, but there are no workers. The Thai workers,
they're gone.
Of the Gaza border were or murdered or kidnapped, and the other Thai workers all over the country ran away.
Right.
I have Palestinian workers. The borders are closed.
They can't get in.
They can't get in, but even if they can, right, I will not take them back.
Right.
Not those guys. And I went back to my farm.
This is in B'nai Tekelim?
About 10 minutes drive from...
What do you farm? What types of fruits and vegetables?
I grow mainly eating table grapes. And well,
Must be delicious.
They are good, yeah. And I have a small field of vegetables, lettuce, fennel,
cabbage. And you generally sell this to wholesalers or distributors who then... Yeah,
open markets.
Simple as that.
Open markets. October 7th was...
And this is important for your income, obviously.
Of course. October 7th was right in the middle of harvest.
Right.
So everything that was in the fields went lost.
So has your farm been worked in the last 4.5 months?
Nothing.
Nothing at all?
Nothing. Because they're abandoned.
Because there are people that have been volunteering, that have been...
I wasn't in the farm. No one could
tell... No one's there to supervise.
The volunteers what to do.
You're a lone farmer.
I'm a lone farmer.
There are lone soldiers. We're used to that.
My wife tried to help at the beginning with the lettuce harvest, but it was good. It was something, but not enough. With volunteers, people were afraid to go out at the beginning of the war.
Yeah, understood.
So
I asked you why you're here, and the answer is?
The answer is that many farmers are badly affected by this war.
Any idea how many? Is it in the thousands?
It's hundreds of farms.
Throughout the entire Israel?
Entire Israel. There are farmers in the north that cannot reach the farms because it's dangerous.
Right.
There are farmers in the south that cannot reach to the farms because it's close to the Gaza border. There are farmers that were killed on October 7th, and there are farmers like me that left everything behind and went to the army for 4.5 months, and the farm's collapsing.
Right. So are there people here who are helping the farmers?
We are trying to raise the awareness of the American people that the war is not ended. For some of us, it's just started right now. And we need the help of the Jewish community.
How do people help? Is there a specific fund or an avenue where they can help?
Yeah. I'm working with Keren Ashvis. Keren Ashvis is an organization that helped us, farmers that kept Shemitah. Right.
And you're a Shemitah farmer, meaning you don't farm during Shemitah.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was only 1.5 years ago.
Right. It just happened.
And when I went out from Gaza to a 24-hour vacation, I saw a message from one of the guys from Keren Ashvit, and he said, listen, it's true that we are not working between Shemitah and Shemitah, but in this situation, we are feeling that we cannot leave you behind.
Right.
We are together. We will help however we can. And when I finished my army service, they came to me and asked me if I can go to America. Why?
To
raise money, to tell your story, right, to raise money for the farms. Farms are collapsing. There are some farms that were already closed. And this is a disaster for Israel.
So is there a specific fund that people need to be aware of, a website, anything that we need to...
Keren Hashvit and Save a Farm. Save a Farm is an, a fund of Keren Hashvit.
Which they'll find there on their website?
They will find everything over there.
JM and the AM Sergeant, Yehuda Alon is with us. And he is one of hundreds, as you just heard, of farmers in Israel who are in a very difficult financial situation. Your story is so easy to understand. You haven't been there. Your wife tried. You have no workers. The foreign workers and the Palestinian workers are likely never to return, I would assume, unless the Thai workers start getting the feeling of security to come back, that they feel secure enough to come back to Israel. I don't know if that's going to happen. In general, the manpower issue, which we have been discussing here since October 7th, vis-a-vis the army and vis-a-vis so many industries, the manpower issue in your industry, God knows how long it's going to take to solve that problem.
Yeah, the government now, they are dealing with the army budget, with those poor people that were evacuated from their homes for 4.5 months.
North and south.
And the farmers are at the bottom of the list.
Right.
Now, the government is speaking with the government in India, in Sri Lanka, in some other places, but it can take a long time.
Do you know of any... foreign workers who Dafka did stay in Israel? Is
there There are some like 15% of the Thai workers that stayed.
They did stay.
Yeah. But poor workers, they were murdered. We saw them in Kfar Aza, murdered or kidnapped.
Some are still being held or not as
no,
hostages?
No, they no. Were, out. Those, they are out, but...
But there are American hostages still.
Hamas did it on purpose. We captured some terrorists alive. They were getting orders to kill those Thai workers for them to run away to affect the Israeli farming agriculture.
Right.
They knew where the Thai workers live. They went over there in purpose. They knew what they're doing. And for now, those terrorist efforts, they are successful. We're suffering a lot.
You mentioned being in Khan Yunis. And people don't realize, although those who follow the news carefully maybe do realize it more than others, all the different dangers that you are involved with when you're in Khan Yunis. And what do I mean? Obviously terrorists, that's, you know, and the RPGs and the grenades, etc. But these tunnels that you're infiltrating or discovering, they could collapse at any moment. And they could have booby traps inside them. The booby traps in general in the buildings were responsible for some of our boys being lost in this war.
I was injured from something like this. On January 12th, we entered a pharmacy, and there was a bomb hidden somewhere over there.
In a storefront pharmacy?
Inside a pharmacy, yeah. On the main road. Yeah, it was a pharmacy. There were all the other stuff was over there and a bomb. And I was injured. One of my friends was badly injured. Baruch Hashem, I'm fine. I've been 5 days in hospital and I returned back to my to my soldiers in Gaza. But yes, everything in Gaza, everything in Khan Yunis is trying to kill you. They have diseases that we don't have in Israel. Every window is a potential death.
Right.
I went with my wife in Jerusalem, and she said, "Why are you looking up all the time?" So I said, "Listen, I just realized that I'm searching the rooftops of all the buildings in Jerusalem without me noticing at all."
Yeah.
And I told her, "Listen, I can tell you every building that we went, what flowers they have in the windows, what's happening on the rooftop, everything." So yeah, everything in Khan Yunis can kill you.
And you know why I laughed a moment ago? I laughed because I think in every military around the world, including the United States, not a criticism, an observation that I grew up with, if one is injured in a war or in some type of military action, they take every opportunity to then retire from the battle. And you and your colleagues, you and your brothers, you and your friends, you go to the hospital. I don't know what area of your body was affected by this injury.
Stomach, kidneys.
Right. So most soldiers on this globe, on this planet, would use that opportunity to go home. But instead, you and many who are injured much worse than you find an opportunity to get back.
Yeah. Actually, many soldiers came back after injuries. Some of them without.
So explain that. I mean, I have my own theories, and I think our people are unique in many ways. But put it into words for me. What's going on in that hospital where you say to yourself, "I got to get back and continue this mission"?
So that's the same conversation I had with my wife. She said,
she was not as understanding as you were, right?
Why are you? No one expects you to go back.
Exactly.
Not the army, not your friends. No, you were hurt. You're suffering pain. What's going on? And I told her, listen, there is no logical reason for me to tell you why I'm going back, but there is no other chance. I must go back over there. My soldiers is fighting over there.
How many soldiers are you responsible for?
19. Wow. Those are tough days. I cannot sit outside while they are fighting. There's nothing to do about it. I will go back.
Did you lose any of your own soldiers?
No.
Thank God.
Thank God.
What are the ages of your daughters from what to what?
14, 11, 8, and 5.
That's a good argument on behalf of your wife.
Yeah.
Not to go back.
So I had to explain to my wife why I'm going back after injury. I had to explain to my
daughters.
Two daughters.
Especially the older ones, right?
Why I'm going out on October 7th.
Right.
It was in our area. We heard the bombs. We had heard everything. Where I live, we can see the Iron Dome and the rockets firing from Gaza. And my oldest daughter, she locked the door for me to not go out.
How difficult has this war been for your 14-year-old daughter?
It was difficult.
Until today, like, is she involved in the war effort? Is she positive about things? Is she upset and depressed about things?
She's not upset and depressed, but she is she's a teenager that her father were out for 4.5 months. And like every teenager.
And didn't know if he'd come back.
I saw it like, you know, teenagers, you want to hug them, they run away. Mm-hmm. When I came back, she gave me a hug that I saw that it was hard time for her. And I had to explain at the beginning why I'm going out. And she understood. She understood that every generation for our Jewish people, they are those people that will fight for Klal Yisrael, and this is my turn. There's nothing to do about it. This is my turn. I will go. She saw all the vehicles in the yeshuv. It's a religious yeshuv, and the road was packed with cars that going out to fight
on Chag and Shabbat.
On Chag and Shabbat with white shirts. We went out with white shirts to battle, and she understood it. My wife didn't understand the second time that I had to explain why I'm going after I was injured. But right.
But if she was a teenager, she would have understood.
But she knew that...
she grew up to be a mother, so she doesn't understand anymore.
Yeah, but she knew that there is nothing to argue about. I will go back. And the third time I had to explain why I'm going, it's like after 4.5 months that I haven't been at home, I had to tell my wife and kids that I'm going to America for a week.
At least they think you're more secure here than in Khan Yunis.
They think, but
I mean,
they
I don't know what's happening at Pesach, but I'm assuming so.
Yeah, but they told me, like, listen, you haven't been at home. Stay with us. Have a rest.
Right. Although Pesach did have pro-Palestinian rallies this week, so who knows where anybody's safe anymore, frankly. Are teenagers involved in the war effort? When you're 14, 15, 16, high school in Israel right now, are they involved in all this?
They volunteer in many places, in farming, in hospitals, in hotels where the people from the south and north are staying. The kids, the youth in Israel, showed an amazing united thing that we never saw for a long time.
But they're saying that about your generation. You're saying that about them, but the whole
Everyone. That war, you know, I heard a sentence that Jews knows how to die together. We wish that they will know how to live together, but that period of time is amazing. Everyone, we were laughing about this TikTok generation. They are strong, powerful, passionate warriors. I have soldiers 22, 23 years old. They are amazing soldiers. They are heroes. No TikTok, nothing. They went out to fight, and they are amazing. All those guys.
I think about this all the time, especially because of the age of my own children. When there's a young kid who's 21, 22, as you just described, and now you're their sergeant, isn't there a level of experience and preparedness, especially in Khan Yunis, that one needs in order to be involved in these operations? And just naturally, how is it possible for someone who's 21 or 22 to have enough training and enough experience to do what you were doing there?
So reserves in Israel, we have all kind of people. I have a soldier, he's 48 years old, and he is probably the best soldier in my squad. But
because of what he's been through.
Not he's good. He's good. But you have your good things with young guys. They are in good shape. They are in much better shape than I am. And you have the good things about the older guys. They have the experience. They are quiet. They know what they are doing. And combine all together, you have a good squad. You have good platoons. You have everyone knows what he's good at, and we work like this.
Are you a sports fan?
Yeah, fan.
The reason, I'm a football fan, the real football, not what you call football. I mean, I'm joking around with you, obviously.
Yeah, that's probably the one that you're playing with your foot with a ball.
Right, that's you.
Yeah.
Who actually? Anyway, but the bottom line is that there's a theory here. Among the younger, there's a theory among the older people about the younger athletes that because they grew up in this TikTok generation, they're able to process things much faster on the field. It's a theory that I've heard discussed by some of the older quarterbacks. I don't know if you know what a quarterback is, but the quarterbacks in the football league. And I thought that was very interesting. It's one of the reasons they explain that such young quarterbacks now are doing well immediately in the league, because they're just, you know, it's not a big accomplishment for them to memorize, you know, 30 plays and to process all this information after all the time they've spent in front of screens and computers. Do you think the 21 and 22-year-olds in the Israeli army have an advantage now like that because they're so focused for years on technology and fast moving things that you and people older than you would not have had as much of?
I don't know if it's like on other stuff except technology. They are good soldiers, but in the army we also have technology, and those young guys, they are much better than us. We have new drones that we use in-house, indoors, and they were
better
the oldest people. And I'm not talking about old people, I'm talking about guys like me, 35, 36 years old. They were much better.
Right. So there's something to my theory. And even the way they navigate in a place like you had to be in Gaza, the way they navigate has to be a bit different than someone who's 15, 20 years older than them. Not just the speed, but I would again think that just because of the way they've grown up, that, I don't know, I just have a feeling, and I could be totally wrong about this, that they approach a tunnel or a dangerous situation or a potentially booby-trapped building possibly differently than the older soldiers would.
I'm not sure. The oldest soldiers are great soldiers as well. No, but as I said, everyone knows what he's good at, and we are a team that works together. Some will be better in one type of thing, one will be better in another, and we combine everything to be the best platoon that we can be.
Sergeant Yehuda Alon is here. Chumi Jacobson is here. If you want to give me the information, or if you want to join us on the air and just tell people how to support the farmers of Israel. Remember, everybody, the purpose of this conversation, even though it may not be obvious from the way that I've been conducting it, the purpose is to ask this audience to be as generous as possible to support the hundreds of farmers who really have no income now for the reasons that Sergeant Alon described earlier. Chumi Jacobson, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much.
Could you just tell us how we could help out and what we should do?
Yeah, absolutely. Save a Farm on Instagram is the project of Karen Hashvius. Like Yehuda was telling us, they are supporting their farmers. Even though it's not Shemitah time, they're there for them in this time of crisis. What I really wish people in America understood more, that I certainly did not understand until I met with Yehuda, was how big this crisis is. It's not just facing these individual farmers. This is a crisis for for Israel. I don't know about you. The first thing I did after October 7th was I updated all my kids' passports. For us in America, we want to know that we have an Israel to go to if we need to.
Remember, after 9/11, it didn't help to have a passport, but okay, no problem. Go ahead.
But the situation in the world is scary, and we all have a certain sense of peace that, okay, we have Israel. We can go to Israel. Well, if you want Israel to be there, if you want the economy to survive this, if you want the infrastructure of the whole agriculture sector, which really affects national security and their independence, then you need to support these farms. It's affecting everything. Right now, you go to a store in Israel, a lot of the produce, they're either empty or it's imported from Turkey. Do we want to be relying on Turkey? You're watching the news. We don't want, that is not a good position for us. Another thing that Yehuda explained to me, and Yehuda, feel free to jump in, is that these farms that are collapsing, it's not just, oh no, those people now have no income. Israeli Arabs will take over that land and let in their friendly cousins from Hamas and from Hezbollah, and it's very dangerous.
And that situation, by the way, has been going on for years.
That's what I just started to say. It's happening for years. They take farms, they take lands. But now, in this situation, when many farms are in danger, that could be a disaster.
Yeah.
In my farm, we have those Arabs that always look for empty lands and empty places that they can take. Now it can be a disaster.
All right. On Instagram, you called it what?
Save a Farm.
And what do we do with the web? Is there a website? Or
yes, saveafarmfund.org.
Okay. Now you're talking my language. At my age, I need a website.
Yes.
Saveafarmfund.org.
Saveafarmfund.org. Or Save a Farm on Instagram. Or listen, if it's easier for you to remember Karen Hashvias, you could just Google Karen Hashvias. That website will take you there also.
Although, who on earth knows how to spell Shvias in English?
Karen, K-E-R-E-N, Shvias, S-H-V-I-I-S. KarenHashvias.org. Yes, they are, and they're directly on the ground. I'm working with the people who are literally going and visiting the farmers and assessing who's in the deepest crisis, who needs the money now, and they're taking care of
it. Do you have an official position with the organization?
Yes, I am.
Liaison or what?
Technically.
American head? What do we call you?
Yeah, executive director of the American operations of Karen Hashvias.
Are you aware that there was a pro-Palestinian rally in Passaic on Tuesday night?
Well, that's why I waited till Wednesday to come.
You didn't want to leave the house. Huh?
No, I was not aware. That's terrible. I'm sorry.
Sure, it's terrible. It was at the kosher wine event because, unfortunately for the enemy, there were wineries there from Israel. So they don't like that. They don't like anything don't having like to do with Israel.
Anything about Israel.
Is that why you were late today? Because people were protesting your appearance here or not?
Let's go with that.
We've been told, the people of Israel have been told by the government that a certain number of hostages are no longer alive. You've been in Khan Yunis, you've been in Gaza. Do you get the feeling that the majority of hostages are still alive?
Actually, in Gaza, we don't have any connection to the world. We have,
including the intelligence reports.
Intelligence reports is only for our area and what's going on around us. We know that they are hostages alive because hostages that were free told the army and the intelligence about stuff that's going on. We know that there are soldiers that are not alive anymore, but we are not familiar with the details.
And there's so much activity. There's such a bombardment of the enemy, right? By air, land, house to house, building to building, explosions. I mean, we could just, arrests. Have you been involved in some of the arrests of the Palestinians? The pictures we see around the world of those who've been arrested who are in fact affiliated with Hamas?
So where we have been, there were no civilians anymore, and those terrorists that we met are not alive anymore. So you have certain places in Gaza where they are refugees. In northern Gaza, most of them are in Rafah, that you can see civilians, you can see people over there. In Khan Yunis, in those neighborhoods that we fight in, there were no civilians. Every person that you saw is probably a terrorist, and he died very quickly.
Right. But my point is, with all this going on, we can't even begin to understand the strategy of the Israeli army.
No.
You know, we just assume, with all the destruction, how could the hostages survive all this? And how does Sinwar figure out a way to escape every time, etc.? But we don't even have a clue as to how all this works militarily.
It works very, it's very intense, because even when you go to attack a new neighborhood, there is always the fear that maybe there is hostages over there.
Right.
And the intelligence, they work very, very hard all the time to get us all the information about what's going on inside this neighborhood. We are going in, when we go into to a new place, we're going with heavy fire from the Air Force, from tanks, from our units on the ground. Heavy, heavy fire. Nothing is standing still when we finish this neighborhood. For the soldiers not to have not to risk their lives for nothing. We know that we have to go to a certain house. Every other thing on the street will be destroyed.
And every building you walk into, you have plenty of information in advance about what you likely will see in that building or not?
We know what we are looking for in that house. We know.
But will intelligence tell you what the dangers are in terms of walking into that building?
They know, the intelligence know if there will be probably a tunnel in the house or not. Sometimes we are surprised from what we found. Those are the times that something went wrong, probably. But we know what we are looking for in every house. We know what happened before in that certain house. And, yeah, we're working hard and good.
What is Shabbat like in Khan Yunis? Is it nicer in Neve Tikalim?
Yeah, it's nicer in Bnei Tikalim, but there is something special.
Be'emet?
About Shabbat, about holidays, about lighting Hanukkah candles in Khan Yunis, because everything is dark all the time. You put blankets on the windows, so there is no daylight inside, and you light Hanukkah candles, and you sing Kabbalat Shabbat in Khan Yunis. It's amazing. We had a Sefer Torah in Khan Yunis. Someone actually put in his bag Sefer Torah, kosher Sefer Torah, and there is something very special about Shabbat, about Jewish holidays, about Chagim, that you do it inside Khan Yunis. It gives you, like, it reminds you for the reason that you're fighting for.
Are you allowed to be in touch with your wife when you're away?
No. We had, like, one cell phone with no internet that entered Gaza about once in two, three weeks.
So after Shabbat, she can't call you and ask you how your Shabbat was in Khan Yunis. That doesn't happen.
No. And she knew that she won't hear the truth. Didn't ask.
Well, I mean, the part of reading the Torah would probably have been true. But she's being tortured. It's torture for her. I mean, I hate to use that word, but all the women, I know what my nieces go through in Israel.
Yeah,
they're sitting with, you know, helplessly in many cases, and hard to start their day, and they need tremendous help from their parents and in-laws and everybody else who's willing to, the grandparents who are willing to come and help. And
I think for mothers and wives and kids, it's probably harder than for the soldiers in Gaza. We had most of the time, we had good time in Gaza. With among friends.
We had a good time.
We are with friends. We talked all the time. It wasn't boring. It wasn't like, okay.
They don't get in there to make barbecues for you, right? Those barbecues are happening in Israel itself.
Those barbecues, they are outside of the Gaza border.
Do you need those barbecues, or you could do without
them? Listen, you never saw a happier soldier than a soldier that went out from Gaza after 3-4 weeks, and a good barbecue is waiting for him. That's amazing.
It's funny, because when I was on the Gaza border and saw the tanks coming back, I am telling you, you see smiles and a sense of relief on every face.
Of course. The second you cross the border, your body is like...
Right, exactly. Thank God.
Thank God. And I'm home. Barbecues are amazing. Listen, you don't know how happy we've been those times.
Sargent alone is one of hundreds of farmers that need help in Israel. That's the bottom line here today. And certainly we'll remind people even after today to support this cause. SaveAFarmFund.org. That's the one I'm going with, although you'll find them on Instagram and other places as well. SaveAFarmFund.org. SaveAFarmFund.org. So now, a half hour later, you see more and more why I think I'm sitting in front of a Jewish hero after this conversation. By the way, Chumi Jacobson's a wonderful person, but she's as delusional as everybody else in this country. If you think that we are going to have an opportunity to just snap our fingers and go to Israel when trouble starts here, history tells us, even with the state of Israel, history tells us, and I would even argue that current circumstances tell us that's not true. So please, Sargent Alone, here's your opportunity. Help me tell my audience, folks, the future of the Jewish people is in the state of Israel.
Listen, my father is an Ole Chadash from South Africa.
Yeah. Lucky he left. You wouldn't be able to leave South Africa now. You know that, right?
He left. He was born in Rhodesia, Zimbabwe. And he came to Israel when he had no other choice. And he said, he told everyone for years, don't wait for the last second. You will probably not be able to go to Israel when the last second is arriving. But I don't think that we should wait for the last second, because Israel is great. That's the land of the Jewish people. We are all together over there. That's such an amazing place. And okay, probably people in America are wealthier and having probably better life, but there is nothing to compare to Israel with the people and with the experience of the Jewish land and the promised land. And I call all the time for people to come back home.
People in America have a better life. People in Israel have the best life.
Come back home.
Amen. Amen, Sargent Alone. Hatzlacha rabah to you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Are you kidding? This has been an absolute pleasure and a real honor, frankly. The 19 that you lead are a very lucky bunch to have you as their leader.
I'm a very lucky sergeant to have them.
Well, and you said you're a paratrooper. Was that skill necessary in this war or not?
No, not in this war. You won't.
Right.
Jump from an airplane in Gaza, you will probably be first one to die.
Have you used that skill in the past, or you just have it?
Just training. Right. Just training. The last time Israel used paratroopers on battle was in 1956.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not even in the Six-Day War?
No.
Wow. Interesting. It must be a fascinating activity, because I've never jumped out of an airplane.
Yeah, yeah.
But it must be a fascinating
activity. Amazing. I love it.
You do love it.
Yeah, most of
the... So if you were on vacation and you needed something to do to enjoy the day...
I'm jumping from airplanes on vacations.
You
yeah.
do that?
Yeah. Most of my soldiers, they hate it because it's
right. Also,
it's scary, but I love it.
You bungee jump?
Yeah.
You've done it?
Yeah.
Wow. We're so different. It's amazing. It's hard to believe we're both from the same God. Go to the website, saveafarmfund.org, saveafarmfund.org. Final word, Chumi, what can you tell us?
This is a crisis that every Jew needs to be paying attention to and helping.
Yeah.
We amen. Need to help.
And I hope everyone does respond. Saveafarmfund.org. Chumi Jacobson, I thank you.
Thank you.
Continued success with the work of Karen Ashvius and Sargent Alone. I hope we have an opportunity to meet in Israel. I hope. Maybe at B'nai D'Kalim.
Maybe. Come to visit the farm.
I would like to. I'd like to do that. Bezrat Hashem. How far is it from Jerusalem?
About 45 minutes.
That's it?
Yeah. 20 minutes south from Beit Shemesh.
Oh, that's where you are?
Yeah. If you know the place
so
of...
So why are you 45 kilometers from the Gaza border?
This is 45 kilometers.
That's 45 kilometers?
Yeah.
Kiryat Gat or more south?
It's more east.
Oh, you're more eastern.
Yeah,
Canada.
If you know the place of Beit Govrin, the caves. So,
and what bar mitzvah boy in America doesn't know Beit Govrin? Come on.
Right in the Beit Govrin junction.
Wow, interesting. So you have a lot of visitors in your area. Seriously. There are tour buses there all the time.
At Shemitah, it was packed of people.
Imagine so.
Yeah.
Kol hakavod and toda rabah.
Thank you very much.
A real honor. Saveafarmfund.org. Saveafarmfund.org. More coming up. It's Thursday at JM in the AM.